Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Instant replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
It's time to focus on another sport we're obsessing over. And this is one, Bone, where our teams locally are actually good. This is a switch from the professional sports teams in the area.
Yeah, Kyle Boone normally gets draft calls for us.
He does. Very high draft calls.
And he will again.
And he will. But for right now, Kyle Boone gets to talk about actual North Carolina teams that can ball. You've got Carolina State and Duke all in the Sweet 16. Heck, go down to Palmetto State and throw Clemson in. The four ACC schools are all from the Carolinas, and let's talk about their chances of advancing this weekend. Kyle Boone, hoops writer for CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, joins us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Kyle, it is always a pleasure. How you feeling, man? You doing good?
I'm good, yeah. Awesome. I think I slept like 14 hours last night, catching up from the last couple days, so... Yeah, I'm glad to join you guys, and I feel like you're in better spirits than last time I talked to you, which was right after we were figuring out what happened with the Hornets draft.
We were upset that they didn't take Scoot Henderson, and now we're happy they got Brandon Miller.
It's funny how that changed.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk about these squads that have made it to the Sweet 16, and I'll start with NC State because it might be the most amazing story of all of these teams. Now they step up. It feels to me like they're stepping up in class a bit and playing Marquette, but I say that realizing that they stuck it to Carolina, a one seed in the ACC tournament final. Do you think they can beat Marquette? How long can this run go? What do you think?
I think they can beat Marquette. I think if you're going into the NCAA tournament, you think, you know, can NC State beat Texas Tech? My answer was like, probably not. And they've just proved everyone wrong for really 2 weeks running now. They win five games in the ACC tournament. They really got hot in the NCAA tournament, kind of kept staying hot, beat a really good Oakland team in overtime that, you know, beat Kentucky. Marquette is definitely, I think, a step up in class, but Marquette is not totally infallible. They ended up losing nine games on the season. They look pretty good because Tyler Kolek has returned from a six-game absence from an oblique injury. But NC State, the way they're playing with so much confidence, this is a really likable team. DJ Burns' emergence down the stretch here has given this team a different dynamic that is really, frankly, hard to deal with. So, yeah, if the Wolfpack end up advancing into the next round, it wouldn't totally shock me at all.
Kyle, we'll stick with the surprise teams locally here. You just talked about NC State. Clemson gets through to the Sweet 16 on that roller coaster ride that is Clemson. How do you think this matchup with Arizona plays out? I got to tell you, I saw 7.5 as the spread, and I'm intrigued by that right now.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. To me, I think Arizona's strength is probably its front court size, just because they have so many different big men that they can throw at you. Omar Ballo is really dominant on the interior. And I think Clemson, so long as it can stay out of foul trouble, PJ Hall matches up fairly well. Very experienced, a guy who I think can play in the NBA. It's going to be interesting, though, because Arizona really likes to push the pace. They like to run with a lot of tempo. That is not necessarily Clemson's game. In fact, Clemson's one of the slower teams. So I'm curious to see if Clemson's going to try and slow Arizona down, or if Clemson just says, hey, let's run, let's have a track meet. The way that Clemson has been able to play in the NCAA tournament, it feels like they could play a number of different ways. Chase Hunter's been fantastic, two consecutive 20-point games in the NCAA tournament. And this team, like when they're making shots, turns out they're pretty lethal.
Is North okay? So Arizona, you're saying Clemson can definitely give Arizona a battle, you feel like. What about that other game in the West? Do you feel like, is Alabama as tough as a game for the Tar Heels as you think Clemson is for Arizona?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Carolina wins this one easily. This Alabama team is hot right now, but they are wildly weak when it comes to defense. And first round, they end up beating Charleston. You know, they score 109 points, and everyone's goo-goo-gaga over Alabama just because you score 109 points in the NCAA tournament. Everyone kind of flashes on your radar. But they gave up 96 points in that game against Grand Canyon in the second round. Grand Canyon gave them a pretty good little run, and Alabama really did not play that well. And in fact, Nate Oates after the game was like, you know, we kind of got bailed out because we did not play that well, end up winning by 11 points. The final score maybe wasn't totally indicative of how that game went. Carolina, though, the way they're playing with RJ Davis, they have so many different weapons that they can throw at you, and Harrison Ingram, Cormac Ryan, Amanda Bacot, like this team, it feels like, is playing at a high level at just the right time. Some of their young guys are stepping up. Their transfers that they've relied on all season have been playing very well. So to me, I think Carolina, clearly a class above Alabama. Alabama could end up scoring, you know, 85 points, and it's close. But the way Alabama's defense has looked really all season, I think Carolina should be able to run away from this one just because of the susceptibility of this Alabama defense.
Yeah, Bama could score 85 and still lose by 10. It could be one of those type games. What do you think, Kyle? We're talking to Kyle Boone, CBSSports.com. Kyle, how difficult is this matchup for this particular Duke team against Houston?
I think it's tough. I think it's an interesting kind of matchup just because styles make fights, right?
Yep.
And this Duke team is their finesse, their flash, their guard play is elite right now. Jared McCain coming off a 30-point game, scored 30 points and ended up not scoring again after like the 11-minute mark in the second half. So like he could have gone for 40 or 50 pretty easily. Actually made his first 6 3-point shots in that game. So I think it's going to be fascinating. This Houston team is so physical, so brutally physical, that it is overwhelming to teams. And I think the interesting matchup in this one particularly is Houston kind of got out Houston in its last matchup. They played against Texas A&M, end up winning that game in overtime 100-95, but A&M really took it to them physically. They out-rebounded Houston. They really gave them a pretty good scare, and I don't think Duke is necessarily equipped to give Houston the same type of fight that Texas A&M gave them, but the backcourt talent that Duke has, the way that their guards are playing right now, and then if Kyle Filipowski has a big game as kind of a facilitator, their offensive hub, I really like Duke in this matchup. And in fact, I picked Duke over Houston in my bracket. I think I'm going to stick with it. Houston's got some injuries. They're coming off an overtime game, really brutally physical game. Duke is definitely in the mix here, I think, to play upset, and I think worthily so right now.
Yeah, it just dawned on me while you were talking about how physically brutal the matchup is and the way Houston plays. Also, mm-hmm. Duke gets them in the Sweet 16, not the Elite Eight. So you wonder, even if Duke survives Houston, that's a physical team that could take a toll on you for an elite. I'm not trying to look past Houston by any means. I'm thinking, though, if they win that game and they beat Houston, that's a tough team for the Sweet 16. Turn around 2 days later, you got another game there, Mac. That could be a tough physical matchup that's not the Elite Eight game.
Yeah, that's true, too. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
It's already a hard enough matchup on Friday night.
Yeah, you got to turn around and play another one 2 days
Sunday.
Later.
Yeah. And they play afternoon on Sunday, right?
Yes.
As opposed to, like, at least late afternoon, right into the evening, as opposed to night. Kyle, I want to ask you about the ACC's kind of reputation. ACC fans around here get very defensive of the conference when they hear a lot of bad mouthing, and there was a lot of bad mouthing this year of the conference. There's a lot of bad mouthing around the selection process, and they went out there and again got it done in the tournament. Other than Virginia, who we want to disown, the other four have made it to the Sweet 16. What do you think of the ACC as a conference, and do you feel like, does this prove that some people nationally were giving it too much gruff? What do you think?
They are who we thought they were. That's what I would say about the ACC. The top of the conference is strong. We thought it was strong. Duke, Carolina have represented well. I think it's impressive that Clemson and NC State have made it to the Sweet 16. You know, four teams in the Sweet 16 out of the ACC, 25%. That's really good. But I would say that just because Clemson and NC State maybe got hot doesn't mean that, you know, like a Wake Forest or a Pitt was worthy of being in the NCAA tournament. I don't think Virginia was worthy of being in the NCAA tournament. So the top of this conference remains strong, but I think the ACC was rightfully critiqued this year for maybe having a little bit of a top-heavy conference. And I get that, you know, maybe they'd be a little bit sensitive that, you know, you get four teams in the Sweet 16. It's, hey, look at me. You guys clearly underrated this ACC conference. And maybe there's some truth to that. But, I think it's worthy of still giving this league some grip. And I think I would continue to do that despite, you know, some of these top teams. I can't imagine Clemson makes it much longer. Can't imagine NC State makes it much longer. We'll see what happens with North Carolina and Duke. But that's kind of how I feel right now. Like the ACC, I think it rightfully got the flowers it deserves. And NC State, Clemson, obviously, well done. You've made it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. But I don't think it's a referendum on the strength of the league or even really a weakness on the league.
Oh, my gosh. He's giving Griff, Gruff. He's giving all of it, Bone, to the ACC fans. Oh, the ACC fans are going to be looking for Kyle Boone, CBS Sports. Kyle, this is where I ask you to tell the audience your Twitter handle so ACC fans can interact with you.
Yeah, my Twitter handle, it's MacBone at Twitter.com. Just give me a shout there and let me know what you guys think.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
They would never be mad at us on the platform.
No, we never get the Griff and the Gruff.
No, he gets the Griff, I get the Gruff.
At Kyle the Boone, B-O-O-N, on Twitter. Gentlemen, start your tweeters. All right, Kyle, we appreciate you, man. Glad to hear you doing good. And enjoy the Sweet 16.
Okay, sounds good. We'll see you guys.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wesson Walker Show.
B-Rad Malibu writing in on the text line. I love the kickoff rule. Bring back the excitement of kickoff returns. That could be a game changer. Tell us how you feel just like B-Rad did. My name's not Brad. It's B-Rad. 704-570-9610 on the FanDuel text line. I think most people, if you think about it a little bit, because it is a lot of information, it's a big change with a bunch of little intricacies that are not the same anymore. You got to try to wrap your head around it. But once you do, I think people will be a fan of this, given the alternative of what we saw in 2023 and so on. The other rule, maybe not so much, the banning of the hip drop tackle. I just talked about that a little bit before we dove into all the info that was changed around the NFL kickoff rule. But Wes, what's your thoughts on that with the NFL hip drop tackle being banned because of the injuries that it led to in previous years?
obviously is not a safe play. There have been many guys that have gone down because of it. But, I mean, I'm not sure at this point what defenders are supposed to do, especially when you're talking about smaller guys trying to tackle bigger guys. I mean, you got a big tight end, Gronk size, or, you know, a big running back like Derrick Henry or something, and you're 190-pound, 200-pound defensive back. I mean, like, what are you supposed to do at this point, especially if he gets behind you? If he's coming off of a – if you're coming off of a block and he's going by you and you have to try to make the tackle, what are you supposed to do at this point? Just let him keep running? Because you can do horse collar, which is fine. I'm more than okay with. But if you can't do hip drop on a bigger defender like that, you're just going to go along for the ride now. And so I think this is just going to increase the scoring all the more in the game, because it's going to make it that much harder to tackle guys in the open field. You're going to have to be in a position where you can make a play from the front or maybe from the side. But we know how great these players are at breaking tackles. Debo Samuel comes to mind. When you talk about a guy like that, once he gets a full head of steam going, how are you supposed to deal with that if you can't, if he's coming at you from an angle, or, you know, you're unless you're standing in front of him when he's coming at you, it's going to be hard to be able to get guys down from behind. And so that's what I think for the defenders. It's just another rule to kind of hamper what they can do out there. And I think this is going to be something else that's just going to add to the scoring, because if a guy gets in the open field, I think you are going to see guys that are just going to take the 15 and just do the tackle. So either way you go, the offense is going to benefit from this greatly.
980 texted in, good thing we traded Dante Jackson because he'd never be able to tackle people now. The size is what people are worried about from the defenders. It seems like what most people are focusing on, it's the small cornerbacks and maybe even the smaller safeties. If there is a Derrick Henry-like figure, a Rob Gronkowski-like figure who gets to the secondary and they get an angle on you, you're able to catch up with them because you're faster. But now when they're so powerful, there are people that are worried about their ability to tackle those players. Is it just a foregone conclusion that they're either going to score or you're going to get a 15-yard penalty?
They're going to take the 15.
I really want to see how this plays out, because looking at how people reacted to the banning of the horse collar tackle, there were a lot of the same, oh, let's just play flag football comments then. But what players did was they adapted. I'm a little worried because it doesn't seem like it's as easy to spot as a horse collar tackle. You get one finger behind that, behind the shoulder pads, right around the neck, and then you pull even a little bit. It's pretty easy. Like, a lot of it is so, it's a judgment call, I'm not sure. Horse collar tackles aren't really a judgment call. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to play by the letter of the law, if a finger gets in between the neck and the shoulder pads and there's any kind of pull, or even if you just get a grip, horse collar, don't really have to debate this all that much, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like this one is tougher to have with some of the judgment calls that might be, okay, you're supposed to not drag the defender or drag the offensive player down by their own weight because it leads to more injuries in the lower half of their body, and I get that. But, man, it feels like that's not going to be as easy to call in some of these situations. So I'm a little bit worried about the official's ability to enforce this. And it feels like that might also be the number one issue for, well, once we get past all of the weeds that represent, hey, football is so soft now, get out, you know, like macho kind of stuff. I understand the defense wants some advantages on that side of the ball because it feels like they dwindle down, right? I get that. But once we get past all of the macho chest pounding, oh, this isn't football anymore, and really try to figure out if this rule should be in play, I do think that the officials are going to have a hard time officiating this from the get-go. I hope that they adapt and become good at it. I hope that defenders will also become good at it. It does feel like people also are speaking about this rule in a sense that no tackles are made behind a carrier of the football except the hip drop tackle, which also isn't true. Like, smaller players also have ankle tackles. They also can just grab your legs from behind until you fall, and you might fall forward, but you fall. So you still have other ways of tackling. And I think that's what people are also having a harder time coming to grips with. So I want to see how this plays out. But the argument against it that I most understand is, whoo, buddy, we're giving the officials more power and more of a gray area to deal with, and that can't be good. Like, I hope it's not bad, but I know giving the officials more of a gray area to operate in, that can't be good.
Well, see, I think the actual motion of the tackle, I think it's very easy to see.
You think it'll be as easy as horse collar?
The hips go up, hips go down, and it's going to look two ways. It's going to look like a guy out there at a rodeo trying to corral a young calf. Is going to look something similar to that.
A lot more people doing the Jared Allen
tackle. That's what I'm saying. It's gonna be, that's how it's going to look. You know, when you see a guy go up and down, it's going to be pretty easy to spot. But the thing is, you know, when you talk about the ankle tackles or the wrapping of the arms, man, that's why I said this rule is going to benefit the offense so much, because these running backs, man, these guys are, they're monsters. And a lot of these receivers now, so when you try to, at full speed, the only way you could hope to execute something like that is if they have to break a couple of tackles before they get to you to slow down their momentum. But if a back is coming through at full speed and you try to run and get the ankles or tackle them at the legs, that's what they train. That's what they practice every day in practice. They practice through running through stuff like that. If a running back gets tackled by some of those techniques, the coach is probably going to be like, you're not going back in the game if you go down off of those type of tackles. So that's why I say the offense is going to benefit. Now, if you can catch a guy right on time and you got a great grip where you can wrap those arms around and you got it, more power to you. But because even for linebackers and players like that that do have some size, once a guy gets by them, they don't have a ton of options. And again, a lot of these offensive players are built and trained to run through those types of tackles. It's like they just feel like a little bump when they're running. That's all it's going to feel like for a lot of these guys. So I think that for the defenders now, I mean, you talk about the rules they put in for pass interference, where they get called for that more times than not. Now you get rid of, like I said, horse collar for sure. That was a great play to take out of the game. I had no issue with that. But now that you take the hip drop out, and you can't target, you can't do any of that stuff, which I'm not a proponent for targeting, but still, you can't hardly do anything as a defender. And so now they're forcing guys to put themselves into uncomfortable positions to make plays, because it's just going to be extremely difficult for anybody in the back seven to be able to make some of those plays from behind now. And so, as I said, I think you're just going to see like guys do with pass interference, to where sometimes if they know they're beat, they just grab a guy and just live with the results. And I think you're going to see that now with this hip job tackle, where guys are going to be like, look, man, I'd rather, especially if you're playing on a really good defense where you feel like that you can get a stop or limit a team to a field goal anyway, they're just going to be like, hey, I'm just going to do this hip job because you're not going to score.
Yeah, they look like normal tackles. I'll say that. Watching, I've never seen anything. I honestly didn't know that this was a huge problem. I really didn't. And NFL information, the investigations, they'll tell you that, hey, we looked at, I think it was 15 players on that type of tackle were injured. And I think it's something, I heard Mac and Bone reference something where it was like, you know, a lot times more, 25 times more. I don't want to get the figure wrong. And so I'll get drum on the research there. But I didn't realize that it was that big of a problem. I didn't know that the NFL was looking into that.
Yeah, man, those ankles and those knees, man, when you drop that weight, again, like you're talking about, even if you're a 250-pound man, but a 200, 210-pound guy dropping all that weight on your legs, and especially in some of the awkward positions it can get caught in. We've seen the ankles. We've seen, the broken bones. And then Jeffrey from Concord asked a good question saying, do you think this could make running backs more contract money since they will be more valuable with this rule? I think this could revive the running back position to a degree, as far as people finally seeing it again for the game-breaking position that it could be, because I think you're going to get, like, picture a guy like Bijan Robinson now. He's going to be, you know, with the way he can break tackles and things of that nature. So I think that is going to bring more excitement to that position with guys breaking longer runs.
Well, and not even because of speed either. I guess a little bit of speed, because you have to get to the second and third level even faster. Mm-hmm. But if that happens and you run out of steam because you're tired, maybe you just rely on strength if that's the case. Those mm-hmm. are some of the unintended consequences that might be a result of this. And we know that the NFL can go back and modify some of this.
Yeah.
And so maybe they do that. Maybe they do that with the hip drop tackle. By the way, continuing to use that term, Copeland, a.k.a. Jokeland, writes in, hip drop tackle seems like an attempt to say something as the kids say. it does feel. I know it got Fitty into quoting Sugar Hill Gang, the hip drop tackle.
I was also trying to make a nice Shakira reference about the hips don't lie, but you know, we went with the cattle reference and getting a calf on the ranch.
I like the idea of Jared Allen not being able to play football in today's day and age because he is wrapping you up like a calf out there on the ranch.
Yeah, man. I need the rodeo to come back so I can go.
You do like the rodeo. You've said that a couple times. Yeah, I've been at the rodeo a couple times. It's been fun. I want to go have a show outing at the rodeo.
980 number said Derrick Henry's about to run for 6,000 yards. I would agree with that.
All right, Fitty, hold on one second. We'll read some quotes. I want to get to why you want me to stop for a moment. But 803 says, coming from a former lightweight defensive end, I have so many clips of me hip dropping. This is the most ridiculous thing ever, man. And then you mentioned a couple of the other techs rolling in. So people that have played football on the defensive side, they're telling you that this is going to be tough. It's certainly a biased opinion. Like, I want to see how this plays out before, but I'm telling you, it does seem like the rule that is implemented that I feel the most unsure about. It looks like a normal tackle. It does not look like there's a problem. I know that there are more injuries from it, and therefore I'm cool with the NFL investigating it. But it's hard for me to look at that play as so dangerous to where we have to ban it because of I don't know how else you can tackle in some of those other situations, but I'm willing to
find the hallway and try it during the break.
Okay, Fitty can be our guinea pig. Fitty, you said you wanted me to hold on. I imagine this is from you not believing that I've been to the rodeo a couple times.
Well, you prefaced your trip to Nashville as saying, quote, it's not your scene.
Oh, it doesn't mean that I'm not comfortable in that scene, though.
The rodeo is a place that Walker Gunderson male feels comfortable being at because are you wearing cowboy hats? Do you got boots on? Do you got a dip in your mouth? Are you wanting to get on a bull and see how long you can ride?
No, when I go, I'll take some big league chew. I'll go get, they still sell that at DSG, so I get big league chew that can replace that. But I definitely want to do the belt buckle if I go to the rodeo.
This is when I was a kid. So this is not, like, this is the thing. I might not want to go to the rodeo so badly anymore, but yeah, man, this is what I grew up doing. I have to remind you again that I'm from Catawba County / Claremont. Like, I grew up in that environment to where maybe it wasn't my favorite thing as I grew up, but I certainly know the landscape of that lifestyle very well, having been to a couple rodeos, having been to all sorts of tractor pulls in my life. My family grew up in Tipton, Indiana, which is corn country that nobody talks about, but just as prevalent as Iowa and Nebraska. Like, it's not my life anymore, but yeah, man, that used to be it for sure.
Do you consider a professional bull rider a sport or is it just an activity?
Oh, like, no, that's a sport, dog. I would tolerate no slander.
I guess the question is how do you train from an athletic standpoint to, quote unquote, ride better and ride longer?
That's a good question. Because I've seen they've had series about that and doing it, but I know when I watch it, the best guys, they hang on when they do the bulls, because there's different types of things that you could do at those rodeos, but my favorite is bull riding. And I know that I know the best guys hang on for 7.5, 8 seconds. That's what the guys at the top of the sport are doing.
Right. 8 seconds is what you're supposed to last on a bull at the rodeo. I want to be very clear about that. Bagel guy writing in, Walker's middle name is Gunderson, LOL. No, Fitty just has this weird thing where he gives people random middle names that just seem like they fit. And Gunderson is his answer for me. Lance is for Mac. Leopold. It's very weird. I don't know where it came from, but he stuck with it. And that's why he called me Gunderson. The rodeo with the sport, I like that you drove us there. Like a cliche radio topic of, is X really a sport or a game or a hobby or an activity? I think the way that I feel about watching it, it does feel like a sport to me.
Yeah, and the injuries those guys sustain and what they have to go through. But, you know, you're talking about the opinions and people saying different things about that hip drop tackle. Going back to that, you know, J.J. Watt had strong thoughts on it.
Well, it's flag football comment.
T.J. Ward's was pretty funny saying, but he was saying that no wonder every offensive record is being broken. And so that lends itself to conversation too. It's like, do guys have as much respect for offensive records that are being broken these days with the way that they cater the rules so much to the offense? And I'm an offensive guy, as an offensive lineman. Don't get it twisted. I'm an offensive guy, but I do feel a lot for the defenders, man, because they're pretty much helpless out there. And this rule just adds to it.
I guess, so if we're talking about the offensive records being broken, it's more so to me because of analytics saying that throwing the football leads to more points than running the football and playing smash mouth as much. I don't know if it's, I mean, how many of the rules, I'm not saying that that doesn't contribute, but the records being broken, he's saying, no wonder why there's so many. I'm trying to think of some.
I think you're going to see some running backs that are going to have some massive seasons.
If you could hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3, sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
We've been talking about a lot. And of course, there's the Sweet 16 out there. And the most popular topic of discussion on our text line right now is, which all-time great sports movie would you like to see remade, a sequel, something along those lines? Happy Gilmore 2 has apparently been greenlit. Adam Sandler confirming that to Dan Patrick, and our text line is just having a ball with that. Maybe our next guest has a thought. I'm putting him on the spot, but we'll see. He's pretty good at that. He thinks on his feet, and he talks on his feet well. We got Wes Durham, the voice of the Atlanta Falcons, ACC Network, ESPN, college basketball, and college football play-by-play man. You can also hear him still doing a bit of talk radio over on SiriusXM. He's back with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Wes, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm great, Kyle. How are you?
I'm good. The text line is just, you know, you know how text lines go on radio shows. Happy Gilmore 2. You into it?
I'll see that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd do that one. Uh-huh. It's funny you ask, which one would I want to be remade? I mean, I'm old enough to remember Julius Erving in a starring role in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
I would actually like to see, and this is older than that movie, there was a movie called Fast Break. You'll get some old heads calling about this movie. The movie featured Gabe Kaplan as the coach of Cadwalader University. It's called Fast Break. You can look it up. Mm-hmm. You'll probably on YouTube even find like the trailer for it. But I would love to see that movie get remade, because it is a college basketball story of a guy who, I think he's in New York, and he goes down and he, you know, this ne'er-do-well college that has no future and low enrollment and all these problems, they create a basketball team. And, well, he brings guys from the streets of New York, and, you know, he turns a football player into a basketball, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And but I'd love to see Fast Break. Bernard King starred in the movie.
Huh. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Bernard. Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Bernard King was in the movie. Mike Warren, before Hill Street Blues, was in the movie. Trying to think who else was in it. There are a bunch of guys in it. But anyway, I'd love to see Fast Break get remade. And who amongst us would not like to see North Dallas 40 get remade?
Ooh. I like to eat. This is why I asked you the question. I knew you'd go some places that the text line haven't. That's fantastic.
I mean, sure, it's easy to say I'd want to see The Program be redid. You know, The Program movie that was James Caan coaching what was supposed to be Florida State.
NIL edition.
They filmed that, by the way, in the halftime of the South Carolina-Tennessee game, I want to say in 92.
Really?
Yeah, they filmed part of The Program during the halftime of Tennessee-South Carolina. I want to say 1992 at Williams-Brice Stadium. I could be wrong on the exact game, but nonetheless.
That's really cool when they do that, just as a sidebar. I was on the field at Clemson 3 years ago, I guess it was.
Oh, when they did the rundown
when
the
they
hill
did, yeah,
the
well, when they did, yeah, when they did the movie, the Disney movie, I was on the sidelines. Yeah. That was a pretty cool scene to watch them keep everybody in their seats at halftime, you know, get that fake team on the field. It was pretty cool. That's some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right. As you were describing the program in Fast Break, the lowly downtrot, it almost sounded like you were describing the ACC, like you were pretending to be, you know.
Well, you mean the ACC 90 days ago.
Correct. Yeah, the one that was going nowhere, two-bid league, just isn't what it's always been. Wes, I know a lot of my listeners are looking for college basketball pundits and broadcasters with the major networks for, you know, a few more people to take up the cause of defending the ACC. And people have texted me today to say, well, at least we can count on Wes to defend the Atlantic Coast Conference. Four teams in the Sweet 16. I believe that speaks for itself, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted it out the other night. I mean, I just want to make sure I got the new math right. You know, the teams that were, you know, it was two, like, in late January, less than right about 2 months ago, it was two teams were going to make it. And that new math must mean that when you say two in late January, that means four to the Sweet 16 in March. Because I don't know what, and look, they got jobs to do, okay? I'm not, although I will say I'm really impressed with guys that can do brackets and then turn that into evaluations of leagues at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because their job is to tell me who's going to the tournament, not tell me why their league, they think a league is downtrodden and doesn't deserve more than that or whatever. But maybe that's part of the rhetoric that it's become. I'm not smart enough for all that. I would say this. This league went to 20 games 5 years ago. At the same time, the NCAA decided to create their own metric and analytic because I think the NCAA thought they could corner the market on RPI and things like that, right? They saw what the computer polls were doing to the old BCS, and they kind of wanted to brand their own stamp, if you will, right? And I think that was a good idea, but it's been poorly executed. And I think the way it's been poorly executed in short, Kyle, is because they treated it like the Thousand Island dressing and McDonald's Big Mac secret sauce. I mean, it's not Thousand Island dressing, but it's close and it's something else, but we're not going to tell you what it is because it's a secret sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eventually, basketball coaches and the analytics people that work for them are smart. And they finally figured out that, you know, while everybody early on was talking about margin of victory with the net, it really wasn't the margin of victory. It was the efficiency ratings in these games. So it was paying people dividends to beat bad teams by a lot of points. And I think coaches got really smart. At the same time, the ACC had Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, Jim Boeheim all retire. Okay? So you lost a dominant voice for this league. And pretty soon, I think you're going to find out that Jeff Capel and Brad Brownell and to a degree some of these other guys, Jim Larinaga, I think, did it a little bit late in the season. They're happy to take that voice. And who knows who Louisville hires. Maybe they hire a veteran guy and we get another voice in the league. But it's been cool since the ACC went to 20 games and went through a transitive piece with coaches and a lot of portal evacuations and acquisitions, but more evacuations than acquisitions. I think you'll agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
The ACC's become a nice punching bag. And then you throw that on top of, you know, what the train wreck happened at the end of the college football playoff. And I have a whole nother segment we can do one day on that in the summer. But I think that you find yourself in the perfect storm where the ACC is the easy punching bag. And I think the rhetoric in college basketball, if those guys really want to get serious about their jobs, they'll start treating college basketball, you know, with the flavor and the tradition that it deserves in this league. And this league has to stump for itself. That's the one thing I will tell you that I'm going to do as long as I'm principally affiliated with it. I'm not diminishing anybody else, but don't tell me this league is bad just because you're saying it's bad. Give me something to work with. You're just telling me, well, they're not very good. And that's what Steve Forbes was about. Remember, Steve Forbes said, I didn't get mad at Joe Lunardi until Joe Lunardi started talking bad about our players. There you go.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. I'm with you on all of it. We got Wes Durham with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. So, you know, you and I as broadcasters, we look for great stories. It's what we do. We're storytellers. So you're watching. Sure. I'm watching NC State. And you know the history, but yesterday was the 50-year anniversary of Norm Sloan's Wolfpack beating Al McGuire's Golden Eagles for the program's first ever national championship. They face Marquette on Friday, and if the Wolfpack advance, they might see Houston in the Elite Eight. Awesome. This is, I mean, for a lot of people, it's, oh, wait a minute, you know, who did Jimmy V beat in 83? You know, Marquette, Houston, is this shaping up? It's already something special, but does this keep going?
Yeah. Well, to me, I mean, I jokingly told somebody yesterday, I said, hell, if I'm Boo Cargan, I'm loading David Thompson, Tommy Burles, and Monty Towne, Tim Stoddard on that damn plane. I mean, their rear end's going to be behind the bench. And then I want Witt Lowe. I want Sidney Lowe and Derek Wittenberg, and give me damn Cozell McQueen. I want them in there, too. I want them all behind the bench. I mean, this has got the 83 vibe, though. I mean, think about it. They had to win in Atlanta in 83. They beat Carolina in the semis, they beat Virginia for the championship at the Omni in Atlanta, and then God Almighty, Jim Herrick's Pepperdine team couldn't shoot free throws in Corvallis, Oregon. They won the first round. And then people, don't forget they beat Virginia again in Ogden, Utah to end Ralph Sampson's career.
Yes.
To go to the Final Four in Albuquerque, where they beat Georgia in the semis. By the way, a Georgia team that had beaten Carolina at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. So, I mean, one thing kind of leads to another here, and Kevin's done a really good job. And, you know, and I heard all the talk going to D.C. about job might be on the line and things like that. But, you know, look, it's not easy. I mean, they've been through it in football. They've seen how long it's taken Dave Doran. And I'm thrilled for Kevin. I'm thrilled for the program. I love it for Boo and the people in Raleigh and the longtime NC State fans. I'm really excited for Gary Hahn, who's retiring at the end of the year, Kyle. But reality is that, you know, State's a threat now, and they've got winnable games. I mean, Marquette, very good. Tyler Kohler, very good. Iguodaro, terrific inside. But Iguodaro and DJ Burns will be a thing on Thursday or night as well. So I'm really interested to see how NC State handles the stage. And, hell, let's be honest, they're playing with somebody else's money at this point, aren't they? I mean, they really are. They're playing with others. They're playing with John Calipari's money if they're playing with anybody.
No doubt about it. All right, one more thing on this, and I want to talk football for a minute. And I'll let you roam on this one. Carolina gets Alabama, fantastic offensive team. Duke gets Houston, a very physical team. And this one kind of feels like the potential for the Tennessee game last year. You've got NC State and Marquette. Shaka's got a guy in Tyler Kolek who can flat out fill it up. And then Clemson. Yeah, and then you got Clemson taking on an Arizona team that I think they can beat, but Arizona's very good. Who's got the toughest matchup here in the Sweet 16 of these four teams left?
Probably Clemson, because I think Arizona's legit. I do. Now, I think Clemson can be their kryptonite, though, because Clemson will try and match you on the perimeter. And, you know, Chase Hunter's not bad defensively, and I think Clemson's kind of found that defensive swagger back a little bit. But it's going to come down to P.J. Hall's got to have a good game. I mean, they've won these two games, and he's been good, but he hasn't been P.J. Hall, right? And I'm looking for him and Ballo to be kind of an interesting show, because there's every reason to think that Ballo will be the better player inside, but P.J. Hall might be the craftier guy. Ian Shefflin is going to be a hard matchup. But Arizona's really good. And I think Carolina-Alabama is going to come down to Nick Pringle's going to have to play a lot, to be honest with you, because I think that you've got guys. They don't have anybody who averages more than 5.5 rebounds a game. Carolina has two guys that average double what Alabama's leader does, when you think about it, and Baycott and Harrison Ingram, right? And if Cormac Ryan and those guys hit shots, I think Carolina can beat Alabama. Alabama will have to defend, too, and I'm not sure where they are in that particular discipline right now. Duke is pretty simple to what John Shire's got. You know how Shire said after the first game in Chapel Hill that he didn't think they competed? Duke has to compete, Kyle, if they're going to beat Arizona. It's that simple. Cryer's talented. Shedd's talented. Kelvin has a team that wants to be physical. Duke can be that team, but it's going to go back to the singular piece that Duke has been kind of advancing and avoiding all year long, and that is they don't have a rim guy. They don't have a guy who can protect the rim. They don't have Derek Lively. They don't have Marvin Bagley. They don't have that guy, if that makes sense. And so far they've been able to kind of find ways around it. I believe it's become McCain's team in the last month. Not to dismiss Filipowski as a player. I think he's a talented guy. It just feels like it's more Jared McCain's team than it is anybody else's right now.
You tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.